Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group and proud host of VFB. And today's guest is somebody I absolutely just love his work. I am humbled that he is on VFB. And yes, I am going to say this. He is a person I want to be like when I grow up as an entrepreneur. So it is absolutely an honor to have Ash. Calarucci, right? Probably Calarucci. Okay. It is an absolute honor to have Ash Calarucci on VFE, CEO of StartEd, as well as, yes, one of the core architects and producers of EdTech Week in New York City. So I had to bring him on VFE because ultimately, you know, technology, AI is going to take over the education ecosystem, and we got to find new ways of integrating AI seamlessly into the operating model. So to have Ash here to pick his brain, to highlight specific strategies, to unwrap specific methods, and then also what are the new ideas coming out in EdTech, in the EdTech world. So Ash, welcome to VFB, my friend. How are you?
Very good to be here, Dr. Connor. A pleasure.
Absolutely. Just an absolute honor to have Ash here. And Ash, we're just going to jump right into it because to have you just unpack your thinking, unpack your perspectives and insights, this is going to be very invaluable for the VFE audience as well as our listeners and viewers today. But just to get started, right, and this is to expand on your knowledge and expertise in the EdTech world, but also in AI education. But it's a fun question as well. With your expertise, with your knowledge in EdTech, AI and education, what is your excellence song that defines your leadership in the ecosystem?
That's such a great way to start the conversation, Michael. I think when I think about the work that you and I and thousands of others have done to bring the industry to this point, I think about how important it is to not focus on the technology, right? Technology has always been an enabler. It is not the end with all. What I think I'd like to base my next few comments on is a little bit of a foundation. I've spent most of my time investing and enabling investment in EdTech companies. I've done so for about 100 companies from pre-K through workforce learning at various organizations like Techstars, NYU, Intel. And then about 10 years ago, I sat down with some other great exit founders in New York City. And what was birthed was StartEd, our entrepreneur executive education company and networking and learning environment for the industry, as well as EdTech Week, our industry conference. So we gather all the stakeholders in education because you need a village to build a compelling, impactful company in this space. As with everyone, I've been tracking the conversation around AI, and I'll go back to my initial comment that it is not the end and be all. It is enabler, but it is rapidly evolving, and we all want to be prepared for any changes that it might create. The point, the most salient point I heard in the past week, I think myself and thousands of others were in San Diego last week speaking with each other. And one of the best, most succinct ways to describe this was that in this moment in time, in early Q2 2024, the majority of people are building on AI. They're not building AI.
Right.
And the very few, I'd say some percent of individuals who are actually building artificial intelligence to solve educational challenges, they have a very different take on where this technology is. And from what I understand, their consensus is right now it does a great job of disintermediating some of the tasks that we usually translated into jobs that go into manipulating media. Yes, it does impact our ability to write, our ability to depict our thoughts, our ability to process them and gather information. But at the end of the day, it's still about manipulating media and it's about communication, right? And that results in two specific areas it can change schools and environments. One is in how people are made aware of and are informed about specific aspects of education, and then how people experience the service and be able to provide feedback and have a good customer experience as part of engaging with education and technology. Those two are really the only two areas where this technology is impacting us right now. That's not to say in a few months we'll have more areas that it does.
Yeah. Ash, thank you for that, because your statement, I want to expand on that, building on AI. I think that's very important, because when we look at artificial intelligence, and now I'm just being specific for level setting purposes, let's say the dynamics of classroom instruction, right? And we're looking at how to prepare students. I like to say there's that element of college readiness. Obviously, we want to focus for career readiness, but this new readiness that just evolved, which is digital readiness, right? And when I think about digital readiness, having that level of readiness for classroom practitioners, for leaders, and for students. So when you say building on AI, right, how can we ensure that we're designing an operating model or instructional framework or an instructional model for Generation Z and Generation Alpha, where now we have this equilibrium between artificial intelligence and human intelligence, i.e. the classroom practitioner or leader?
Another great question, Michael. I think we want to look at the problem from two different perspectives. One is, how is the technology impacting the classroom, and how are the students and the educators impacting their futures using the technology, right? It's a mental shift from being a passive, almost a passive recipient of the value of AI, the efficiencies, the productivity, being aware, and then also needing to manage around the risks of some the relative hallucinations that the technology might have, versus knowing the technology's limitations, its possibilities, and using it to be more productive directional in your career and instruction as a student or educator. Those two areas are very different and they occur simultaneously, and we need to separate them out when we're responding to that question. And I think with the first group, the responsibility of lies really in, unfortunately, a handful of individuals, right? True AI technology is being relatively controlled by some large organizations, and like we experienced with the advent of search, right? There were tons of different organizations. You must remember brands like Alta Vista and others, Sierra, that went by the wayside because Google was the most resourced and they had the talent, right? We're encountering a similar experience here, where those protagonists, they've changed their brands and names, where it's relatively the same people, right? Unfortunately, there are groups like Anthropic and OpenAI making those step changes in developing the artificial intelligence. And then there's a lot more folks, I think the 99%, who are building on the technologies that those very few are determining. The responsibility of that for that first group, how it impacts the lives and productivity of children and educators in the classroom, is unfortunately again in those fewer hands. So those groups need to be advised. They need to understand the dynamics of the education space. They never, I highly doubt they've actually spent much time in the classroom. I know they want to. I know both those organizations have started concerted efforts to understand the needs and desires of educators, superintendents, and students, but they're still early in that journey. They didn't build it for education use case, right? And then I think the second part of it is, I think, more aspirational, and to me, more inspirational. This is about showing the individual educator and learner how one might be able to advance their objectives, their lives, improve the quality of their families using this technology. There are significant gaps to it. One of the most salient, I think, is the fact that most educators, let's talk about New York City, for example, right? So in New York City, we have about 80,000 educators teaching close to a million students. And a fair portion of those million students are going to end up in a tech job, whether they like it or not. It's going to be influenced by technology, right?
Yeah.
But those 80,000 teachers don't have a lot of context. The majority of them don't have a lot of context about what the tech environment looks and feels like. What are the skill sets, the mindsets, the culture required to be successful in that environment? And I think that one of the biggest opportunities here is to enable educators to understand what they're building, what how they can change classroom instruction to inform that next generation of worker in the U.S.
Yeah, Ash, great points, because I love how you highlighted that there's going to be various elements of technology that's going to be integrated into the future jobs for Generation Z and Generation Alpha. That's why there's that huge emphasis now, even though it's college ready, career readiness, college readiness. In the K-12 sector, we have to add that level of digital readiness as well, this digital ecosystem. I want to expand on the development. You started talking about the development of artificial intelligence, the development of these various softwares. Now, I, as you know, Ash, I have a statistical background, analytical background, and the design of AI. We always see the front end experience, but the back end. I want to speak specifically around the back end, because I want the ed tech, or I should say the AI engineers and software engineers and designers and data analysts, really focus on this question. The back end design to achieve equity, right? Mm. And we'll talk about, because of the very limited experiences, because it's domain expertise, technical expertise around developing these algorithmic models, developing these statistical models. How do we now, if there's very limited experience in the classroom sector or the dynamics of the classrooms, really understanding the needs of our students, how can we start building these LLMs or these statistical models or building algorithms for front-end AI experience to level set equity within the development process of that?
It all comes down to the data, Michael, right? Yeah. So AI thrives and is grown and manipulated and ends up in a certain, takes on a certain perspective on the world, just as a young human being would, right? Nature versus nurture. It's there are scary analogies. And in an environment where there's biased data, when there's a lack of data, the human being also takes on certain biases. Similarly, this is the risk and reward and the opportunity around AI. The considered efforts spent by certain organizations, there's a few great foundations spending some time on it. There's organizations that manage and guide how we collect data in schools. There are policies that allow us to do it safely when it comes to children. Those three or four institutions need to simultaneously focus on gathering additional data sets, which allow us to figure out what creating equity and also identifying marginalization looks like from a data perspective, right?
Yes.
And we need to teach and feed the relative AI tools with that information and train them, you know, in order to really be recognized. So it's what the entities that are responsible for doing is necessary. What they're doing is necessary, but it might not be sufficient. We in the education space need to take a step forward and provide that information, be available to change those perspectives that they might have as it's being developed.
Thank you for that, Ash. And Ash, you hit upon a great point, is that the necessity to add in additional data sets. And I was actually speaking with a friend who is an economist, And we were talking about that and the addition of diverse data sets into these models. And we got into this conversation around the F1 accuracy of the model. The confidence interval might be compromised significantly because of the data sets aren't, you know, it's acknowledging marginalization within it. It's acknowledging some of these, I like to say, attributes and assumptions that we would normally not add into a statistical model for us to have the various outcomes of coefficients or whatever we're looking at from a predictive standpoint. But I loved how you stated that these additional data sets are needed. And I just want you to expand on one thing, and I apologize for this, Ash, because this is so critical. When we start seeing some of the models, when we're testing and training them, and they become compromised, right, or it doesn't reach that level of accuracy, but we're adding in elements of equity that has never been added in before, how do we analyze these models if we're on the back end of developing, let's say, this new technical software that is adaptive, where students are, you know, it gets to the level of zone proximal development? I want to go on the back end because we do have a significant number of economists as well as data analysts, software engineers who listens in. And I want them to be able to move beyond the noise and focus on the signals of the data so that we truly reach equity with AI and education.
So there's two separate problems here to be addressed. I mean, there's a lot, but I think to me there's two big chunks. Right, one is the some inaccuracies of the existing data set versus those who we might not even have data on, right?
Right.
So equity and marginalization results from things like a large swaths of the U.S. and the world not even having access to the internet. Right. If there aren't if the users aren't on online, there's no data to be fed. There's no behavior to be understood, and there's no need or desire. Or the needs and desires of those individuals and populations aren't included in the analysis. Right. So organically, a large group gets kind of left out. So we need to be mindful of that and extrapolate and collect information in order to be more inclusive. That's a big task. I don't think anyone's really working on that, right? Right. That's a higher order problem that I think those three institutions of kind of foundations, technology, and policy need to come together and figure out. And unfortunately, it's a very complex problem because it's global. But going back to the first point, the lack of the inaccuracy of the existing information and the biases it might have already, that is probably above my pay grade. but I do know that at least we know that we have a problem there, right? We know that the problem exists. We know the relative scale of it, and we know who needs to be involved. What I don't see yet is a publicly held accountable initiative to make sure that those decisions that are being made are being translated to the general populace, to the users and educators and learners that impacts, right? So we probably need a little bit more visibility in that. So the current administration, as I understand it, their new ethic policy is really focused on this particular topic of making available what those institutions are doing to make future generations of AI and what is built on it a little bit more equitable.
Great. Thanks, Ash, for bringing that up, because that has been kind of one of my private concerns and one of my kind of open questions, or I should say open essential questions I bring up with regards to how are these models being developed with equity, marginalization, as well as all of what I like to say, these inhibiting factors, right, that we see in the economy. How are we building that? So, because that's what's represented in our schools, specifically when we see the demographic changing of where public education, or I should say education in the ecosystem, 57% are going to be Black and brown. And we're seeing this exponential increase of students that are living in poverty within our schools. So now if we're building these emergent technologies and looking at artificial intelligence in our classrooms, we want to make sure that the software, hardware, yes, that's we got to focus on, you know, eliminating those inequities. But when we talk about software, we have to be able to design AI platforms and solutions with equity in mind. So thank you for that, Ash. But based on the economy demand, we talked about this moments ago, that there's a, and you said it, but you didn't say it explicitly, but it was implicitly there, that there is a de-emphasis on knowledge-based skills, which is the traditional college pathway. But how the economy is driving, the economic drivers, where the economy is going, Generation Z, Generation Alpha, who's considered the generative native. Now we have to look at coupling technical skills with digital skills within students, this new paradigm of education. Specifically, when we're thinking about designing career pathways with the integration of AI, how do we shift leadership or shift the ecosystem mindset to truly focus on technical skill development and digital skill development?
Michael, you probably remember growing up in a time where we didn't have access to unlimited information, right? A lot of the people alive today don't remember that, right? And I think we are, our generation has kind of this unique perspective on the step change that created. I want to think back to our parents who growing us and coaching us to find our passions and livelihoods. They had a relatively good idea of what jobs we would have. Right. Yeah. And I think back to not that they had it easy. Certainly my parents didn't have it easy, but I know that a lot of parents had a decent idea of what the general options were in a relative area of whether you wanted to become an educator, a banker, a construction worker, whatever it was. Right. I have a daughter now and she's growing up. And I have no idea what a job will look like when she reads working age. I think this is a very unique time in human history where the generation that's growing, the next one, can't really have any reference point and can't really guide with specificity what one should do with their career. So how do you actually make those decisions as a parent, right? The reason I want to put this frame on this response is because we are creating an environment where the moment we train someone on a specific set of technologies and jobs, those jobs will disappear and morph quicker than we can train.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And that cycle is becoming shorter and shorter. So when we were growing up, it used to be about 20 years. They could roughly say jobs stayed relatively consistent. That's been shortened to about 5 now, and that'll continue to grow shorter and shorter. So what do you do in that situation? How do you train someone? You actually have to shift how people are trained in school. One has to actually reimagine what adult learning looks and feels like. My hypothesis is that we have to shift to an environment where we go through pre-K-12, there's a post-secondary experience, and there's likely a period of working, and then there's probably another period of learning, another period of working, or the probably need to, those work streams and learn streams probably need to happen simultaneously. And the future probably looks like us learning and working at the same time and allocating time Absolutely. Accordingly. That's probably a somewhat utopian perspective on things. The actual reality will probably be we'll probably have a lot of biases and inequities, but.
Yeah.
That's the future that we need to be creating policies and technologies for.
Absolutely, Ash, well stated. When I think of new models, right, new models in the education ecosystem, when I think of new value capture, value creation in the context of student learning experiences, you just highlighted the accelerators and the incubators that need to be implemented, right? That it needs to be, instead of it being a reimagination process, it needs to happen within a design process, co-creation, co-authoring, obviously, voices of our constituents, empathy, first design principle. But you hit on it, right? School should not look the same as how our educational experiences, our parents' educational experience was. Give you an example of this. My son, who just turned nine, Ash, nine, you know what he said he wants to be? An entrepreneur. Entrepreneur. But again, that means so many things that he could explore, so many pathways. But again, it's developing those key skills that you talked about, right? We don't know what they're going to learn, but that learning slash working, developing skills, developing collaboration, developing that level of empathy, all of that should be a part of this new paradigm, this new model of education. I don't know if we're going to get there, because again, that to me is the antithesis of what the traditional legacy thinking mindset of education, 200 years of the industrial system, but we have to keep on pushing in order to get there. I don't think we could get there unless we could change the mindset. Let me rephrase that. Change the mindset of the shared mental model of the ecosystem. But it goes nicely into this question, right? That needed transformation. I'm with you 1,000%. That is the utopia, right? That is the utopia. But we have to take into consideration some of the inhibiting factors that prevent us from reaching that utopia. There are traditionalists that still exist in the education ecosystem that want to protect the status quo, that do not want to change the status quo. We still have elements of instruction and leadership that focuses on adults as opposed to being student-centric. We need to have this level of disruption. We need to have this level of serial change and disrupting at the incremental level to get to that architectural change that you highlighted. What cultural ideas, Ash, and this is something that, you know, we need to focus on. What cultural ideas or recommendations do you suggest for the broader redesign for us to reach that utopia? What are some of the cultural practices to change mindset, to level set artificial intelligence, to level set these new paradigms that we're talking about, to be a part of the organizational strategy for leaders, so that we can move beyond what the traditionalists say that we have to continue that isn't working?
I love that question. So from a culture perspective, I want to maybe take it somewhere a little bit personal as a foundation. So I grew up in Sri Lanka, on the other side of the world from where I live right now, a small little country, 20 million people. There's very few of us in the US. And in Sri Lanka, it's a majority Buddhist community. I call myself Buddhist as well. And we grew up with this idea of significant respect for those who played mentor or educator roles in the community, right? And in fact, there's also this idea that everyone can be an educator and a mentor, right? I mean, it's everyone's responsibility to impart what they've known to the next generation. In fact, if you think about it, that's kind of why human beings exist and have prospered, because we genetically and also through the language we've learned, we pass on knowledge. But it requires a certain respect for the people that do. The unfortunate nature of how culture has developed in the West is that, especially the classroom educator, there's a gigantic delta in, I think, the relative respect and the reward one receives for taking care of our most vulnerable learners, right? And I think that us as a culture, we need to make sure that those educators are respected and rewarded more. I think we need to revisit our educators and be more thankful and grateful. If we made that simple cultural change, I think we wouldn't have a lot of the knock-on effects, which is the lack of educator retention, the level of compensation that educators are receiving. There's a lot of cultural nuances that kind of are you can tie back to that level of respect. Maybe that's probably not the answer that you were looking for, but I think that's where my mind went.
No. I say this all the time, right? And I brag about the education ecosystem, our leaders, our teachers, our students, because during COVID, we're the only industry that flipped the model in 2 weeks. We literally, if you think about it, we flipped a business model or education model in 14 days to ensure
Because
that
you
we.
have to, and that's what teachers
That's what we
do.
do. I mean, and literally, Ash. And I think that in the United States, we need to value our educators more, compensation, support. Then we will start seeing those levels of retention, those levels of being a part of the cultural threads more, right? And I think that once we put that emphasis that, without a teacher, I always say this, without teachers, without a teacher, anybody that is anybody within their respected industry, wouldn't be there. It was one teacher, right? I always say one teacher that had the impact of their life to make them continue. So you're absolutely correct, Ash, with that. And last question, you made it through VFB. Last question. Now, I don't know if I can hold Ash to three words, right? I don't know if I can do it. Everybody that comes on VFB, they always break the rules. So Ash, just like I tell every guest that appears on this podcast, take this question as it is. But what three words do you want our audience to leave today's episode regarding AI, artificial intelligence, and the AC stage of education?
Great question, Michael. I'd say my three words are data. My second word is caution. And my third word is application.
I'm going to break the rules, Ash. Can you go in depth with data? You piqued my interest when you said data. Data, caution, and application. Just expand on that just for 2 minutes.
I think we covered a little bit of why the data is most important, and I think it's not about the technology itself and how it accomplishes its task. It's about how it's trained and what it accesses in order to do its job, right? So I think if we collectively as the industry can make the information available for the technology to realize some of the biases and teach itself even perhaps things that we might not even realize the exist, then that's probably a great place to spend a lot of our time and effort as we develop this new technology. Caution is I think if I were to hyphenate it, it's probably cautious optimism, right? I think you need forward momentum. I think there are a lot of people kind of holding this technology back, and because of fear or because of how it thinks it might change their lives. I think at the end of the day, we are still in control. We are still making the decisions. The technology is not coming for us, right? It's not really coming for our jobs, at least anytime soon. So cautious optimism in learning it and understanding it, how it applies to you and the people that you care about, I think is well served in this time. And then the third is the best way to actually dive in and understand this thing is to apply it, right? So take your daily lives, whether that's managing household chores and your scheduling, whether it's managing the classroom and its instruction, whether it's with your entrepreneur and marketing and creating awareness of your business, whether it's enabling the success of existing people that you work with, apply it to your daily lives to try it out, and I think you'll understand where the technology actually is today. Which is one, right? You probably understand, oh, it's not as developed as I had thought, right? And then check it 6 months from now and you'll be able to understand that delta. And then I think that also helps with the caution and the data, because what you learn and are familiar with, you tend to be less fear of and more optimistic about.
Absolutely. Data, cautiously optimistic. And application. Ash, it has just been an absolute honor to have you on VFE. Let's say if I'm a CEO of an edtech company or a superintendent of a district or a teacher, just want to be able to explore, or even just being a stakeholder of an edtech company, and I just want to continue to explore what we talked about in this episode, how would I be able to reach you or even start Ed?
Great question. If you're an entrepreneur, check out started.com. If you're a stakeholder in education and want your voice to be heard, go to edtechweed.com and submit a speaking application or register to attend, or simply sign up for our newsletter, and we'll make you a little bit more smarter on a weekly basis.
Thank you, Ash Kalarowski. Thank you for coming on VFE. It's such an honor to have you. I look forward to seeing you soon. Obviously, I'll be at EdTech Week in October. So I guess that we got a spring, a summer, and then early fall when I see you. But it's always good to hear your voice, my friend.
Thank you, Michael. Pleasure being here.
Absolutely. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.